In our Binyan Abayit tonight, I want us to discuss a few differences between men and women, and primarily revolving around speech. We'll dedicate our learning to Sara Chaya Bat Dani HaKohen. So let's begin. Where do we begin? Good place to begin is in the Torah, right? What's the biggest mitzvah we have? What's the biggest mitzvah? We say it in the Mishnah every morning. Talmud Torah Keneged Kulam. I think maybe the biggest mitzvah is go build the Beis HaMikdash. Maybe the biggest mitzvah is give charity. Maybe there are all kinds of mitzvahs that we might rate as number one. And yet the Torah takes a simple mitzvah, like speech, learning Torah, and tells us that's the biggest mitzvah. What's the biggest avera that we have? Lashon hara. That's what it says in the Talmud. Lashon hara is the biggest avera. So you'd say maybe murder is the biggest avera, right? Maybe idol worship is the biggest avera. Chazal tell us that lashon hara, speaking badly, could lead to any bad thing you can imagine. Speech could lead anywhere. It could lead to the murder of the one who spoke, the one who was spoken about. Everyone could get killed. And we're going to learn an example of that in 2 or 3 weeks in our Navi class about the prime example of Lashon Hara, Doeg HaAdomi, and what he said and how he caused the murder of a whole city because of what he said. We're going to learn examples of that. So the Torah teaches us that speech has concealed within it the greatest mitzvot and, by the same token, the greatest averot, tremendous potential in speech. To go either way. Chazal tell us that we know there's a bris, right? We have a bris milah. That's the bris that the Medrash describes as the bris that's in between the fingers of the feet. Then there's a bris between the fingers of the hand. That's the bris of the mouth. That's the bris of what we say. That's the brit kruta l'shpatayim. God made a covenant with us about how we talk. How we learn Torah. How we talk to our fellow man. When God created man, it says he blew into him, Vayipach be'apav nishmat chayim. God blew into him a breath of life. What does it mean, blew into him a breath of life? When you exhale, you're taking something that's within you, you blow it into something else. God took godliness that was within him and blew it into man. Right? What is that godliness called? Ruach memalela, the Targum says. The capacity to speak. The breath of speech. The one action which we do, which is not visible, is speech. Right? Don't see what you took. It is the closest to godliness. You move your hand, you see. Right? What you say, you don't see. And yet, it can have the greatest impact. The story is told about a chassid who came to the Rebbe and said, I said Lashon Hara about so-and-so. I feel terrible. I want to do tshuva. How do I do that? The Rebbe said, it's hard. The chassid said, I know. I want to do complete tshuva. The Rebbe said, okay, I'll tell you how you do it. Go to the center of town. Go to the center of the marketplace. As the late afternoon settles in and it becomes dusk, take a pillow. Pillow is really a pillowcase filled with feathers. Cut open the pillow and spread out the feathers in the wind, and then collect all the feathers back into the pillow. When you've put all the feathers back in the pillow, you will have done teshuva. So the guy says, that's it, Rabbi. He says, that's it. He goes to the center of the city. It's market day. It's the late afternoon. He slices open the pillow, lets out all the feathers, and then starts collecting. He's picking it up, and then he sees a feather flying there. He runs after it. It goes in between this one's foot, that one's foot. Finally, he gets that feather. 15 other feathers flew the other way. He runs after them. They're being scattered all over town. He's running and running and running, and it gets darker and darker, and everywhere he goes, feather, feather. He tries to get a feather. It's nighttime, and he doesn't even have the pillowcase half full. He spends all night looking. He hasn't even gotten half full. The next morning, he's still looking, and he doesn't even have the pillowcase half full. He comes back to the Rebbe and says, I can't. The Rebbe says, right? Once you've said something, it's out there. How can I give you tshuva? The Torah says that's the heftiest avera, when you spread slander, when you say something bad about someone, it's like that pillowcase. Your words, I can't put them back in the pillowcase. I can't take back what you've said. We're about to discuss what is probably the greatest source of happiness and also the greatest source of discord in marriages. Our capacity to communicate and understand one another. Our capacity to make one another happy. People think it's about the gifts you buy. Hope. Men think they can buy a woman's heart with chocolate. Well, it's the closest they'll get. But the truth is that if you know to express what she needs to hear and what you should be saying and feeling, then you don't need all of that. Rabbi Akiva had the greatest marriage and the most dedicated wife, and he couldn't afford to buy her a bed. Chazal say that they lived in hay, and they were wondering, look at how poor we are. And in the morning, he'd pluck the hay out of her hair. And then one day God, seeing how poor they were, sent Elio in the shape of a poor man, and he said, you know, my wife just gave birth, and the baby has nothing, we have nothing to heat him in. Do you maybe have some hay that we could put the baby in? And Rabbi Akiva gladly gave them some hay, and he turned to his wife and said, look, there are people who are worse off than us. We at least have hay, and we have one another. Rabbi Akiva's wife sent him off to learn for years, over 20 years. He was out learning Torah, 24 years. And their marriage was as rock solid as ever. And the clue we have as to their dedication to one another, we have in the words Rabbi Akiva said to his wife. Rabbi Akiva couldn't afford to buy her jewelry, but Rabbi Akiva conveyed to her that if only he could, he would get her the greatest piece of jewelry there was. He promised her, when I'll be able to, I'll get you Yerushalayim Shel Zahav. I'll get to you in a second, Brett, but before we take that lightly, we have to remember, who was Rachel? Who was his wife? She was a girl who was born to the wealthiest family of the time. There were three wealthy families of that time. Her father was one of them. So you could imagine what she was used to. This wasn't just any ordinary girl. If you wanted to make her happy, you're talking about a Jap? Well, she grew up in the lap of luxury, Rabbi Akiva's wife. She grew up with her father being the wealthiest man in town. One of the top three that all of Jerusalem knew, that if there'd be a siege, he could support the city for 21 years. As I'll say 7 years, whatever that means. 7 years he could support all of Jerusalem. That's her father. And then she marries an illiterate shepherd. A man who doesn't know the pasuk Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. But he has one thing about him. He's modest. Modest. And that modesty is going to take him a long way. One of the reasons that we have difficulty expressing affection and admiration is because we're immodest. To say to someone else, you're great, you're wonderful, you're amazing, hurts us. We're not comfortable yet with who we are. We're so thirsting to hear it about ourselves that we don't have the capacity to say it to someone else. Rabbi Akiva, his great, great modesty. Rabbi Akiva had the capacity to love like no one else could. Rabbi Akiva had the capacity to make his wife happy, even though he was away for 24 years. You can imagine what words he said before he left that kept her going for 24 years. Yeah, Brett, I'm with you.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I don't buy that for 24 years. Because I've read this before, and I always struggle with this. Like, he's gone for 24 years. He can say the most perfect words, okay? But for 24 years, there's no struggles. I mean, he's just gone. And so they have separate lives. It's almost like they're strangers after 24 years.
Okay.
When he comes back. So, like, what? How is that so great, you know? Like, I mean, I'm not trying to, like, I think that it's amazing, and I'm not trying to, like, you know, degrade him anyway. It's just, I think that's, to strive like he did, I mean, I think that's, You know, he's not in there every doing every day, you know, going through all these different things that we go through.
Let's add some details.
Okay.
Rabbi Akiva is on his second marriage, not his first. He enters the marriage with a son, Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha. Rabbi Akiva was the bold one. When they didn't want the Romans to know that this was Rabbi Akiva, they gave him a nickname. They called him Karcha, the bold one. The Romans wanted Rabbi Akiva dead. Ultimately, they executed him. So in order to keep Rabbi Yeshua in hiding, they called him Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha, son of the bold one. So Rabbi Akiva enters marriage with a son. As far as we know, it was Rachel's first marriage. By the time that Rabbi Akiva comes back after 24 years, she's wearing such tatters that her neighbors say, "You're going to go out to greet the chief rabbi like this?" Her neighbors are like, "How can you go like this?" What does she answer? "He's coming with all the glory. He's brought her a jewelry of gold. He's coming with thousands, tens of thousands of students." And she says, "Yoda tzaddik din dalim." The tzaddik understands what the poor are going through. She doesn't waver in her faith in Rabbi Akiva. And let's go one step further. Her father says, "I don't want you to marry him, and I'm not going to give you any portion in my lot." Day in, day out, Rabbi Akiva's out there. What would Rabbi Akiva know if she'd go back to her father? Why does she have to contend with this poverty? For what? The man's learning Aleph Beis. He doesn't know anything. Doesn't know Shema Yisrael, Hashem Lokeinu, Hashem Echad. We have a quote of the conversation at the end of the 24 years. Her father says if he would have known one verse, one chapter, something. He didn't know anything. He didn't know how to read. You know, I wouldn't have minded. I didn't say you have to marry the greatest sage of Israel. I said, but a guy who's literate, who at least knows a pasuk in Torah, doesn't know anything. And imagine where she was coming from Kalba Savua's house. She couldn't have gone home to her father?
I'm not like questioning their faithful in each other. I think they have, you know, a tremendous bond. But for such a separation, from my understanding, for 24 years they didn't communicate. No, I mean, like maybe like a letter here or there.
We don't know of letters.
Okay,
we don't know, right?
But that's like the best case scenario. Like, I mean, in my limited experience, in relationships, it's day to day, and like how. I just think that for us as a model, that's kind of lacking.
Okay.
Right? I mean,
I'm not saying you should leave your wives for 24 years. We have to remember that in those days that was a norm also.
Yeah.
He wasn't the only one who did it. There were other rabbis who did it. There
for
was.
Sure.
And things were different then,
yeah.
Like the Talmud says. And yet, I think that there were aspects of their relationship that we are told in Chazal and in the Midrashim that show us, be it their dedication and be it their capacity to love. People have a difficulty. People have inhibitions expressing love. People have inhibitions expressing affection and admiration. And the little bit we do know about their relationship, we see greatness in that area. You want to say that their capacity to be separated for 24 years stems elsewhere? Fine. Okay.
How long were they together before the separation?
I don't know. I don't know of a source that says.
Yeah.
I don't know. But there's a Tosfos. I don't know.
I just think it's difficult
because
you're supposed to be one, right? And it's
okay. Look, I don't mean that we should derive from this how to be away from my wives for 24 years.
No, I know.
But maybe if the Torah gives us special mitzvah that a husband and wife be together the night before a husband departs on a journey and the night he comes back. Special biblical mitzvah that the couple should be together intimately. Maybe it wasn't only about an action that the Torah wanted to happen the night before and the night after. Maybe there's a lot more that's supposed to be taking place, and maybe that's part of what we should be thinking about. Or on a different note, when couples separate before marriage, I mean, we have a custom that for 7 days before marriage, the couple don't meet, the last 7 days before the wedding. So some people don't meet, and also don't talk. Maybe we should give some thought as to what should be expressed beforehand. There's a guy I know who, I don't remember how many days before the wedding, he wasn't going to meet his kala. they were on different continents. She was going to fly in. It was going to be the last 7 days before the wedding. So let's say it was 30 days before the wedding. He flew to his country. She was in her country, and they were going to be in the same continent again, only a few days before the wedding. So he invested. He took a big chart, like a big piece of cardboard, and took pieces of chocolate. And on each piece, he put a piece of paper with a number and made the sign of a heart. And behind each number, there was a letter for that day. One day was about the day of the month. One day was one note was about the number of days left. What that number corresponds to. Each number, a different thing. It's the thought. It's the investment. It's how do I separate? You're right. Marriage is about being together, not about separating. But we will see that there's much to learn from Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva and his wife, Rachel. Yeah.
Could the rabbi ask Nahor to edit that piece out so that we can use it?
Don't worry, not so many girls are listening.
It's not worth the risk.
Okay. You could ask Michel Arash. Okay. So we're going to begin a discussion about discussion. A discussion about talk and the differences between men and women. When we enter this discussion, so as in all discussions, that there are differences between men and women, men view it through men's eyes and women view it through women's eyes. So I want you to bear in mind the following example. Whenever you think of laughing at something that we say about women, so let's understand that there's a very big difference between men and women. Go down to the lunchroom on any given day, any given meal. Doesn't matter if it's breakfast, lunch, or supper. Notice how a guy asks you to pass him something.
Well, that's after you wash
the bread.
Oh,
no.
Oh, no.
Men will grunt at things to one another, to their spouses. It's as though we're being paid by the word. It's as though we're paying by the word, right? So every word is costing us. And men take pride in this. A man will sometimes say to his wife, "Why don't you gauge how many words I say? And you say five times as much as me, and then we'll be okay." And she'll tell him, "What do you mean? The Talmud says that I'm supposed to have 9 times as much as you," it says in the Talmud. God brought down to the world, the Talmud says, 10 measurements of speech. 1 was given to men and 9 were given to women. So your wives are supposed to out-talk you 9-1, right? So let's just begin with that understanding. If she's doing 9-1, she's okay. That's what God allotted her. Now, if she doesn't have to do 9-1 to you, I mean, you know, she's going to have her friends, she's going to have other people she talks to. But the first difference we have to realize is that they have a tendency to talk more, we have a tendency to talk less. And it's not right for either side to impose upon the other their norms. Women very often complain, "He never talks to me." "Doesn't talk to you?" "No, he never talks to me." You guys know the joke. The guy comes to court, he says, "I want a divorce." The judge asks him why. He says, "My wife hasn't spoken to me in 6 months." The judge asks him, "You sure you want a divorce? It's not easy to find a wife like that." See, you guys are laughing. No girl would laugh at this.
But if it's 91, that means that he's even talking about it.
The guy comes to court, the judge asks the wife, "What do you want?" She says, "I want a divorce." He asks her why. She says, "I don't remember the last time he told me he loves me." The judge turns to the husband and says, "Do you love her?" He says, "Yes." "So why don't you tell her?" Well, two answers to this, two different jokes. Joke number one, I told her the morning after we got married, it hasn't changed. Why should I say anything, right? Joke number two, why didn't you tell her? I didn't want to interrupt.
What was the first punchline?
The first one wasn't that funny.
What was the first punchline?
It hasn't changed. So men think that if things don't change, they don't have to talk. That's not true. Men have this simplistic attitude to life. Now this one's for you. Here's a man. He wakes up in the morning and he thinks to himself, am I going to meet anyone today? If I don't meet anyone, I don't have to change my clothing, right? If I don't meet anyone, I don't have to shower, I don't have to shave. Day number two, am I going to meet anyone today? No, I'm still doing research. No one's going to see me. I don't have to shave. I don't have to shower. I don't even have to brush my teeth. I could save a little bit more time. Day number 12. There's a stench around here. I wonder what it is. Now, we all know that this is a very slight exaggeration. Very, very slight. Our wives are going to find out just how slight, right? Women are not that way. Men can be very goal-oriented, and if right now my goal is, let's say, researching a certain project, I don't see any need to shower to research the project, and no one's going to know the difference, right? So when it comes to the little things in life, the details, the beauty, we can easily overlook it. It's not a part of our lives. Women are more detail-oriented. The beauty of life and the details of life interest them more, and that is reflected in the way we speak. When I come here to give a class, I have to get to the point, or at least some point, within 30 seconds of the beginning of class. Because if I don't, I know what's going to happen. Guy number one is going to go get a cup of tea. Guy number two is going to go to the bathroom. Guy number three is going to pull out his laptop. Guy number four is going to start rereading notes from previous class. I know what's going to happen here. Guys have about an attention span of 30 seconds before you have to hit point number one. Now, if this was a woman's class, I could start class with, it's a beautiful day today. You know, I really miss seeing you guys. It's been a long time since we had class together. I really felt bad that I was ill last week, Wednesday, and we had to cancel class. And you guys, your patience are already being worn. Why am I talking so much, right? That would not be the case if this was a woman's class. Well, you guys are marrying women, not men. So when you come home and she starts asking you these questions, how was your day? So the typical response is, okay, what's for supper? Or, okay, how was yours? And then she starts answering you, and you're like, I didn't want to know. No. We have to begin by understanding that there's a marked difference between us. And if they notice details and they talk more than we do, that's a positive. There's nothing wrong with that. And part of what we're going to learn in marriage is the happy medium. Men will very often lead separate lives. The guy gets a promotion, he comes home, his wife says, how was your day? Fine. He gets on the phone with his best friend, he tells me, you won't believe it, I got a promotion. She's looking at him like, say what? Hello? Where am I? Well, you asked me how my day was. It was fine. We're going to discuss where that stems from. It stems from a few places. But the first thing we have to know is the capacity to speak. And we said we would end each class with something practical. So those of you who want to take something practical to work on, I hope you guys call your parents and say hello. And I hope you speak to your mothers. Many people will say, yeah, I call my father and he says, everything okay? Yeah, goodbye. First of all, don't be dads like that. Take more interest and listen more. And secondly, think about conversation with your mothers. And I want to challenge you not only to share with your mothers what's going on in your life, which sometimes people do because that's the woman in their life when they're at Machon Meir, the only woman in their life, I hope.
Or the sister.
But why don't you try to do something else and ask them about their lives? And if not your mother, than your roommate or your friend. When was the last time you took time to listen to what's going on in someone else's life? Many, many men are not good at that. Unless they're like, they like hearing someone else's sorrows because then they feel better. There are people who have that, and that's not good either. I'm talking about listening to someone else and learning to develop a real interest in hearing what's going on in someone else's life. And listening to someone else till they feel like they've finished telling us what they have in their lives. This is a point which, if you learn to do, will get you many friends, and will also will get you better prepared for the conversations that will be more rewarding to your spouses. Many husbands never have such a conversation with their spouse. Their spouse is spending the night trying to share with them the details of the day. And we would really do right if we would come home and take, like some couples have, there are rabbis who have a session with their wives in the afternoon. I don't mean a session like a psychology session. I mean they have a set time. They come home for lunch, and they eat lunch early before the kids come home, take the phone off the hook, and then they sit down and they share with one another what's going on in their day and in their life. And if not every night or every afternoon, they have it once a week or twice a week. And it's something we have to learn, us men, to listen to someone else share details. And for many men, it's a challenge also to speak and share what's going on in their own lives. Where is my life? Where am I holding? What happened today? Those are both talents which people could develop, and to each his own. Every person should think which point they want to work on this week. David, I see you. I'll get